This is an interview with Governor Victor Utia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is December 4th, 1992, and this is tape 4, side 1. So you were talking about your...
What I saw as the years went by, people run for office, and they'd go to different groups, and they would tell them what they thought they wanted to hear, and they'd get elected. But they had a real problem when they got to Salem, because having now, let me call it me, a split personality in the campaign, who am I supposed to be now that I'm here? How do I vote? What do I do? And they had a real problem. I've seen some just really just had an awful time. I never had an awful time. I would just do what I thought was the thing to do, and then go back, and I always figured if the people like what I'm doing, they'll re-elect me, and if they don't, I'll go back in the rug business. And so I was always very comfortable. Well, we're talking about that first campaign. I really think, I'm not sure I want to go down in history this way, but I really think I was the first to use lawn signs, 1958. And we thought that'd be a good idea. And my friends, I had a friend that was a painting contractor, and we got some boards cut up, and he painted yellow. And then we cut a stencil, and we were down there in his paint shop, and a bunch of us, and we were stenciling Atiyah, I think the representative, or however, whatever we did, you know, it was all stenciled. And then I'd go out and try to find places to put the lawn signs up. I went to... You know, I'd say, well, now who's influential? I can remember a good friend of mine from that point forward, Henry Haig, nice guy, dairyman out in Washington County. And he was very well known, highly regarded, and so I went to see Henry. Introduced myself, we sat and talked, and I said, you know, I'm running for legislature, and if you feel you can support me, I'd appreciate it. I didn't get that it was forced into a commitment right there. And he was my supporter then, and we were good friends until he passed away. Henry was really a nice guy, very nice man. So I did things like that. In those days, you ran countywide, not in single member districts. And in my case, there was five of us running in the primary. The two highest votes were the ones that won. And actually, in the primary that year, we had one incumbent running. He was running for his third term in the House.
Mm-hmm. Do you know who that was?
Yeah, Leon Davis.
Uh-huh.
And I thought to my, I think we all thought to ourselves, okay, there's four of us running for one spot. Because Leon's the incumbent, and there was no incumbent in the second seat. But it turned out I won the primary. In the general election, got a few hundred more votes than I did, but we both won in the general election. And that was my first session. It was also fascinating. I can remember this vividly as well. On the night before the primary election, all of a sudden I had this terrible feeling, and I said to my wife, I might win. Then what do I do? You know, you go through it, and all of a sudden, like, my God, I might win this thing. Uh-huh. Now what do I do? Another bit of things I remember from that early campaign, Hillsborough High School, candidates night. And two things happened at the same time, in the same place. Anyway, somebody asked me a question. And I said, gee, I really don't know the answer to that. Then another question was asked, and I can remember this, because we had Leon Davis, who was an incumbent, and then Arthur Ireland. And Arthur Ireland was, he shared, he was part Washington County, part Yamhill County. So anyway, he was Arthur Ireland, and he was an incumbent. Leon Davis is insurance business, and Arthur Ireland was a farmer, dairy farmer. Anyway, the question came up, and I'm sitting between them. Question came up, they said, well, what do you think of the severance tax? And
the timber severance tax?
Just severance tax, the way it came up. But yeah, the answer is yeah, it's timber, but that's, and I think Arthur leaned over to Leon and said, what's a severance tax? And Leon says, I don't know. And I said, hey, these guys are incumbents, you know, I don't feel so bad. They don't know, I don't know, but they don't know either. Anyway, after somebody had asked me another question, I said, I don't know, we went down and had coffee and cookies, you know, afterward, and had several people come up and said, hey, you know, by George, I really like that. You know, if you don't know, you just say so. And I started laughing at myself. Hey, I don't go around saying, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. I get a lot of good reaction out of that. Well, that was that first campaign.
Well, why did you run? I mean, what was your main motive or your main reason for it?
Well, I was interested, very much interested in government. Didn't think it was going in the right direction. There was a lot of, even then, you know, my father-in-law said, you know, why do you want to run for public office with all those crooks? You know, there was a bad image at that time. I thought, well, I'm just going down there and I'll do a good, honest job and work as hard as I can, and maybe somebody will say they're not, they raise the status of elected officials. And there are things that I felt very keenly about. Mm-hmm. I thought that things were not running the way they should. We talked earlier about Franklin D. Roosevelt and my views, and so I think that's what it is. What mm-hmm. it was all about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were there any compelling issues for you at the time?
No. Which it's like, that's not bad either. In other words, I wasn't. I didn't have one thing I wanted to go down and do. I did. You know, you learn again. I was going to, of course, straighten out all the state government in one session as a freshman legislator. That's where I said, finally, I said, no, whoops. Like I said earlier, when my dad died, I was in the business. Keep your ears open, your mouth shut. I finally said to myself, oh, you got to be patient around here. No, I didn't have any, but I did work hard in the committee. I was really concerned about what was going on. I wouldn't mind speaking, and mm-hmm. Sometimes too much.
This is after you got elected?
Yeah, uh-huh. And I'm on the floor, you know, during debates on bills and things of that kind. I was an active participant, and as I say, sometimes talk too much.
What did you say in the voters' pamphlet? Do you recall your original statement in the voters' pamphlet as to why you were running?
No, I suppose it's somewhere, but I don't recall that. Although there is an interesting piece of history. Let's see here. Here we are. In that first campaign, I received $217.50 and spent $138.70.
So what did you do with the extra money?
I don't know. Maybe I carried it over to the next campaign. I really don't know. Now, when I say that to you, you know campaigns today are incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
That I actually have the newspaper clipping on that. And it appeared because I filed that with the Washington County Courthouse. As well as, but I thought I had to do that. I didn't really have to do that. I had to file it down in Salem. So it showed up in the Hillsborough Argus, and that was fortunate to the extent that now I've got those figures that I would have long since forgotten.
Uh-huh. How did the general election turn out?
I won. Leon Davis, I think I had 15,000. Oh, let's see if I have that. Here we are. Leon Davis, at 15,993 votes, and I had 15,511. The next closest was a Democrat. There were two Democrats. It was 12,127, and the other one was 11,986. So I won.
And when you first got down there, what was your impression? when you first walked in. Can you remember the day that you walked in to the Capitol?
Not in that context. Obviously, I remember standing there and being sworn in.
Mm-hmm.
On the floor of the House of Representatives.
How did you feel after you got elected? I mean, did you feel euphoric? Did you feel depressed?
No, it was a new experience. I was willing to go into it. No, euphoria wouldn't be quite it. Obviously, you're glad to win.
Sure.
I don't know. I suppose it's like going from grade school to high school. You know, it's a whole new thing. When I tell you that, you know, you're a big shot in grade school, and all of a sudden you're the smallest shot in high school. Fortunately, met up with four others who were freshmen, like I was, Republicans. Two from Eugene, one from Bend, and one from Salem. And actually, four of us, not the Salem guy, we lived in the same motel. And our four Republicans were freshmen, and we still hang around together.
Who are they?
Carl Fisher from Eugene, Monty Montgomery from Eugene, Doug Hyder from Salem, and Pat Metke, M-E-T-K-E, from Bend. The interesting thing came out of that, the following session, Bob Smith came in from Burns. And so the six of us, and we began to call us Young Turks. We institutionalized that years later. We have a plaque with a Turkish kind of little dagger on it. And Doug Hyder's wife found a cartoon one time. We all have it. And the fellow sitting at the bar talking to the bartender, he says, "I used to be a Young Turk, but by imperceptible degrees, I'm now an Old Turk." And so that kind of eased the way. We had a lot of fun, meaning five of us initially, and then Bob Smith the following session. The Democrats widely in control. I don't recall the number. We jump in and make motions. We didn't know quite how to follow up with them, so we could win.
The Republican Party was kind of in a quandary then, wasn't it? Because they had maintained control for so many years, and then in 1956, the Democrats surged to take control.
Yes.
And at this point, they're still in control, 33 Democrats to 27 Republicans, but. Well, did you feel?
Well, wait a minute. For your tape, it's 32 Republicans and 28 Democrats.
Was it 32 and 28?
Today.
Oh, today.
Yeah.
But
well,
at
you're
the time,
talking about then.
Yeah, 1958.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
I don't remember the number, but yeah, you've got it.
Or actually, this is maybe this was.
I couldn't contradict you or correct you either way because I don't remember.
It was it a difficult time to run as a Republican? I understand that part of that was because of the big tax increase that the Republicans had.
That's my
put
understanding.
In. And so where were you standing on that issue then when you ran?
Well, that had taken place.
Right.
So now I'm running 1958. And even before that, apparently there was some big to do about basic school support or something
right.
like that. But that all came before I went there, and so all I just heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't difficult, no. As a Republican, although I had my first brush with the labor unions, which I have to say one thing for them, consistent all of my 28 years, they never supported me. That organized labor. A lot of labor people voted for me, obviously, or I couldn't have gotten elected.
Mm-hmm.
But I recall the Washington County Central Labor Council was going to have asked candidates to come out. I remember this very well. And So I went out, like I went wherever else they asked for candidates to come and talk to them. And I do recall that night that there were several candidates for different offices, all Republican, not a Democrat. Not one Democrat showed up. And then I read, I don't know, a few days or a week later in the Argus that they supported all the Democrats. And I said, why the hell did they bother me? You know, why did they take my time? If they're going to do this anyway, you know, why invite me? Just don't bother. I've got other things to do. That was my reaction at the time. I've had, since then, many good friends in the labor movement, even today, since I left office. But the organized party never did support me, which incidentally was kind of a pleasant thing for me. I'd go to, as governor, to their conventions. Mm-hmm. I knew they weren't going to support me, so I wasn't nervous. The ones that were hoping that, you know, might have a chance, they were nervous as a cat. I wasn't nervous at all. I'd go down and have a chat with my friends down there that I knew and have a good time. I knew they weren't going to, I knew they weren't going to support me, so I was the most relaxed guy there.
Uh-huh.
Turned out that way.
How did it feel in terms of deciding what to do about commuting versus renting? You said you lived in a motel. Some people commuted, didn't they?
Yeah.
Although at that time it must have been pretty difficult getting up and down Highway 99.
It was still about, for me, about an hour.
Yeah.
Which I guess isn't all that much, but for us Westerners, I guess if you live in the East Coast, that would be just a normal commute. It was easy, it was convenient. When I look back on it, and I left Dolores with the kids, and they were much younger. Let's see now, 58. Tom would have been 9 or 10, I guess. Just getting to be 10. And Suzanne would have been 4 or 5. And this is one of those things I look back and sort of regret. I missed a lot of those times with the children. Left Dolores with a lot of the raising of the kids, and maybe selfish in that context. I can't relive that.
What about your secretary? Do you have a secretary at the time?
Yeah. I actually had the secretary that was, her name is Marion Carr. She was my secretary for quite a long period of time. Lived in Salem. Another interesting thing of those times, the legislators didn't have an office. Your office was your desk.
Mm-hmm.
You had a filing cabinet on the side hall, and the side outside the bar, they call it. On the hall, they're still inside the chambers. There was a room with typewriters, and my secretary would, before the session end, she'd try to get there. I'd dictate to her, you know, so she could get her favorite typewriter out of a whole room full of typewriters. And actually, the legislature was much more accessible. Now that they've all got offices, they've got some place to hide. They all got staffs, all of them. Cost of running the legislature has increased horrendously. Not that that was very pleasant. Amending bills, they used to actually cut and scotch tape bills. I mean, amendments would come in and you'd cut and they'd scotch tape. That was actually tough on the secretaries, but very good for us as a legislator, because we can see what amendments are being made. Today they don't do that. They engross the bill. There's amendments, so they go print a new one. So now you've got a new one. You don't know what unless you got the old one and want to do some comparing, you can't figure it out. And we had, blue ink for House amendments and red ink for Senate amendments, so you could tell which was which, and it was tough for the secretaries. It took a lot of their time just amending bills. That's now 1959.
Hmm.
So, not all that long ago.
At that time, could lobbyists come down and directly contact the members on the floor?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, when I say yeah, after a session is over, the doors are open. Anybody can walk in and walk out who wants. I mean, there was no restriction. You couldn't do that, obviously, during a session. The doors were closed, and there were only a limited number of members that could, people that could come into the chambers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How would you describe who your constituents were?
That's another good thing, and I say good in the sense that versus today with single member districts. I told you running countywide, so my constituents obviously were run from urban to rural. Mm-hmm. And I had to be aware of the total concept. Today in single member districts, you're rural or urban, and that your viewpoint is very provincial. Very provincial. And that's really one of the, I think, bad things in what's happened since, mm-hmm. since I've been in this system. Mm-hmm. Single member districts.
Mm-hmm. What did you consider their needs to be? What were they wanting from you as a constituency?
Well, it varied. You know, it varied to what was going on at the mm-hmm. time. Washington County on the east end was growing. Schools were, you know, just overwhelmed. New schools had to be built. Then you go further out into Washington County, and dairy farmers were concerned about milk prices, and those that were in the timber industry in Washington County were concerned about the taxes on timber. One of the very early bills I got involved with, both in 1959, finally passed in 1961, was the timber tax bill. That was a big issue at that time.
Was that the severance tax then?
No, that we didn't go into severance until later on.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, I'm just sort of picking those things up as we move on. That's the kind of diversification we had.
What assignments did you want? What committee assignments did you want when you were just going down there? Or did you have an idea as to what you wanted?
Yeah, well, I actually wanted to be on a tax committee. As it turned out, that was quite unique in the sense that I was on a tax committee in the legislature all the way through. As you go through, you know, longer you're on different committees at different times, mm-hmm. and I was, in addition to being on a tax committee, but I was always on a tax committee from day one until I left the legislature. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, was also an advantage as I moved through and became even a governor. I had a great sense of what was going on, and mm-hmm. I think I'm one of the very few of anybody that read the annual report of the Department of Revenue. I mean, I read the thing. I had a good sense of, when I say who, I don't, we never knew by name, but category, we're paying taxes. That's why when I hear them talk about the wealthy aren't going to do it for us. There aren't enough of them. If you took all their money, it still wouldn't help. You know, most, I mean, where you're going to get your money is from us. That's where you get the money from. Because there's more of us than anybody else. Those are the kinds of things that I learned. And when I finally agreed to the sales tax bill of 1935, I knew, you know, precisely, I say precisely, you know, generally, I suppose is a better word, how it was going to affect taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And it was a very fair bill. It was a very good one. It was the best one I ever saw. I was on the Food and Dairy Committee in the House.
That first session, you were on fish and game and rules and resolutions.
Yeah.
Were those committees that you wanted to be on, or did they just assign those to you?
I think they just assigned them. Uh-huh. I ask for committees, but you know, what do I know about committees?
Right.
And fish and game was okay because I like to fish. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a hunter, but I liked to fish. Rules was a pretty good committee. That was a committee really that at times would kind of hold up bills. And mm-hmm. That was more or less the Speaker's committee.
It was.
Yeah. The House Committee on Taxation, there's nine, I think, as I recall, but in that time it was three Republicans and six Democrats. Mm-hmm. And Doug Heider was a member of that committee. He was a freshman. Fay Bristol from Grants Pass was the other Republican. We looked on him as being the, you know, the wise head. He'd been there before. Turns out he really was a nice guy, but wasn't that wise. Clarence Barton was the chairman of that committee.
What did you think of Clarence Barton at that point?
Well, he and I hit it off pretty well.
Was he speaker then?
No, he was speaker in 1963.
63,
Bob Duncan was a speaker of the first two sessions I was there, 59 and 61. Clarence Barton was generally mistrusted by the Republicans, but he and I got along together very well. Mm-hmm. And I think it was because I just, you know, I wasn't intimidated by him, nor he by me. Obviously, he thought less of me because I'm a freshman, and he'd been around. But I didn't mind standing up to him at all. Mm-hmm. And we spoke our minds pretty clearly. I can recall later on, you know, we were talking about, I don't recall what it was, late in the session, and I said something like, we were wondering what Clarence Barton was going to do, and I said, well, this is what he's going to do. Well, no, you can't trust him. What makes you say that? Because he told me. And if he told me, now he may have told somebody else something, and he didn't mind turning his back on him. But if he told me something, I knew that I could depend on it.
Hmm.
So we had a good relationship, although we didn't always agree.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I noticed some other members of the committees, these committees that you were on, which were stand out in terms of people either that you've mentioned or people that I've heard of. Holmstrom. He was chair of the Fish and Game.
That's right.
Wasn't he?
That session, incidentally, was the first time we licensed boats in the state.
Was that a controversial issue?
Oh, not really. It's had something to do with the federal government. They said either you license them or we will. So we said, what the heck, if we're going to take money from the boaters, we might take it for the state of Oregon. That was somewhat. But that was the only session I was on Fish and Game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I I think among the reasons, and I can recall the Fish and Wildlife Department, or Fish and Game, no, they had the Fish and Game was one department, and there was a Fish Commission, which was later merged and became Fish and Wildlife, and they're all together. Anyway, they came and they wanted to raise the deer tag, I think from $1 to $2. And so I made the foolish mistake of saying, why? Well, we can use it. Well, that's not a good enough reason. Maybe you need 75 cents, maybe you need a dollar a quarter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got kind of indignant, including the committee, some of the old-time committee members, that no one should really ask a question. You know, I told you, we need a dollar. What more do you need than that? So I wasn't on Fish and Game after that. Very much like one time I was on the emergency board, one session. And I kept asking the question, what's the emergency? I mean, you're not supposed to ask questions like that. So I wasn't on it again.
You've mentioned the Rules and Resolutions Committee as being the Speaker's Committee. And maybe for clarification to whoever is listening to this, what do you mean by that?
Well, if the Speaker had some bills that he really didn't want to see go anywhere,
Mm-hmm. Then
the chairman of that committee would really be the close buddy of the speaker. And it became known that if that speaker didn't want the bill, he'd give it to the Rules Committee, and that was the end of that bill.
In this case being Ben Musa.
Ben Musa, yeah.
And what was your impression of Ben Musa?
Quite an egotistical guy. I never got very close to him. I don't want to be unkind on a historical tape. Not one of my favorite legislators. I didn't really dislike anybody. I could get along with anyone, but I had higher regard for some than others. Ben was not one of those that I had particularly high regard for.
It was my impression that the Speaker's Committee is